This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 36 through 38 from the Surah Nahl, recited by Qasim Razi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa laqad ba'athna fi kulli ummatin rasulan an i'budullaha wajtanibut-taghut. فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ هَدَى اللَّهُ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ حَقَّتْ عَلَيْهِ الضَّلَالَةِ فَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ كذبين. إن تحرص على هداهم فإن الله لا يهدي من يضل وما لهم من ناصرين. وأقسموا بالله جهد أيمانهم لا يبعث الله من يموت بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And certainly we raised in every nation an apostle, saying, Serve Allah and shun the Satan. So there were some of them who Allah guided, and there were others against whom error was due. Therefore travel in the land, then see what was the end of the rejectors. If you desire further guidance, yet surely Allah does not guide him who leads astray, nor shall they have any helpers. And they swear by Allah with the most energetic of their oath, Allah will not raise up him who dies. Yeah, is a promise binding on him, quite true, but most people do not know.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Israel presses ahead with its relentless airstrikes and shelling of the besieged Gaza Strip as the death toll from the genocidal war approaches 33,000. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says International Quds Day this year will be held even more gloriously, as non-Muslim nations will also be participating in the event. And Russia says UN Security Council's failure to condemn an attack on Iran's embassy in Syria serves as a clear illustration of double standards employed by the West. The Israeli regime presses ahead with its relentless airstrikes and artillery shelling of the besieged Gaza Strip nearly 6 months into its genocidal war. The regime's latest bombing of a house in the southern city of Rafah killed 4 people, including 2 infants. Elsewhere in Rafah, several Palestinians were killed and wounded after Israeli jets targeted another residential building. A series of Israeli raids left at least 2 Palestinians dead and over a dozen wounded in Al-Maghazi refugee camp in central Gaza. In Deir al-Bala, several people were killed and dozens injured as a result of the regime's raids. Nearly 32,980 people have so far been killed and over 75,500 injured since Israel began its Gaza genocide early last October. For nearly the past 6 months, Israel has been using starvation as a weapon of war against Palestinians. For 2 million hungry Gazans, most days bring a difficult search for something to eat. Thousands of them are also forced to make treacherous journey to get flour from aid trucks amid Israel's relentless bombing and shelling campaign. Let's take a listen to some of the Gazans who explain their sufferings and how they struggle to get flour for daily bread.
We wait all night for this flour. We sleep on the streets, in the cold, on the sand, enduring hardship to secure food for our families, especially our young children. I don't know what else to do or how our lives have come to this. We implore the world to empathize with our plight.
I spent the night on Kuwait roundabout to secure this bag of flour. It was a lot of hardship, but I thank God and everyone who aids the Gaza Strip.
We were going to get flour, and we have been at this checkpoint for 2 days now. We are facing delays in flour delivery, and there's a shortage. It's not just flour, there's also a scarcity of vegetables, meats, and other essentials like legumes, lentils, and chickpeas.
The founder of the U.S.-based charity World Central Kitchen has criticized Israel over the killing of his staff in Gaza, saying the regime's forces systematically targeted a convoy carrying aid workers. Jose Andres said that cars were hit purposefully, one after the other, and a civilian area under the control of the Israeli army. He held Israel responsible for the killing, which he said was not the outcome of a bad luck situation. He added the Israeli forces were well informed about the convoy's movement and that the cars were clearly marked with the charity's logo. The strike killed 6 foreign aid workers and their Palestinian translator. 60% of non-governmental aid getting into the besieged strip is from the World Central Kitchen. The charity has suspended its operations in Gaza following the attack. The World Health Organization has reacted to Monday's Israeli killing of 7 international aid workers associated with a U.S.-based charity in the Gaza Strip. In a joint press, top WHO officials condemned the attack and expressed concerns about the safety of relief workers on the ground in Gaza.
WHO is horrified by the killing of 7 humanitarian workers from World Central Kitchen in Gaza on Monday. The work they were doing was saving lives, providing food to thousands of starving people. Their cars were clearly marked and should never have been attacked. We need more entry points, including in northern Gaza, cleared roads and predictable and expedited passage through checkpoints.
But it is the responsibility of all combatants in a military conflict to abide by the international humanitarian law, which is to allow access for humanitarians to the population who are at risk, and to ensure that the access for those humanitarians is planned, guaranteed, and supported. That's international humanitarian law. That is the expectation. And deconfliction works when both parties, the humanitarians and the military, observe and are obsessed with that same objective, to ensure that the civilian population receive the care that they need. In November, WHO was clearly stating that the deconfliction system wasn't working. We were telling the world that it wasn't working. It's clearly not working. And our staff and our partners are in danger because of it. And something needs to be done to ensure. We would like, as Tedros said, the conflict must end. Hostages must be released. We need peace. In the absence of that peace, we need deconfliction, and we need humanitarian access, and we need humanitarian corridors.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says this year's International Quds Day will be a global uproar against the Zionist regime, in which people in non-Muslim countries will also participate. In a meeting with heads of the 3 branches of the government, Ayatollah Khamenei said the Israeli regime will continue to be the losing party in the Gaza Strip. He added the regime's recent crime against Iranian military advisors in Syria will not save it from defeat in the Palestinian territory. Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that the Israeli regime will be punished for the aggression. International condemnation followed the Israeli airstrike against the consular section of Iran's embassy in the Syrian capital. The European Union was the latest to join calls to condemn the attack after multiple countries, including Iraq, Venezuela, Oman, Qatar, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, China, and Russia, denounced the Israeli aggression as unacceptable. And Syrians have paid homage to the 7 military advisors who were killed in Monday's Israeli attack on the consular section of Iran's diplomatic mission in Damascus. Let's take a listen to some of those who attended the funeral ceremony on Wednesday.
The blood that was shed represents the blood of all the free people. Let the Zionist enemy know that victory is certain and the revenge of the resistance fighters is coming. If Haji Ahmad Mughniyeh left behind thousands of fighters, Haji Abu Mahdi left behind hundreds of thousands of fighters and precision missiles that will eradicate the occupying usurping entity. We will surely prevail with the help of Allah Almighty.
There is nothing better than a path written with the blood of martyrs, and no revelation greater than the souls of our martyrs and those who came before them. They have left an indelible legacy for this nation that can never be forgotten, and those who follow in their footsteps will never be misguided. As President Hafez al-Assad said about them, the martyrs are the most honorable in this world and the noblest of human beings.
The Light of Matter's blood has always been the guiding path for humanity towards its salvation.
These martyrs who came from different corners of the earth, from Iran, Iraq and Lebanon, sacrificed themselves in defense of Islam and Sayyidina Zainab, peace be upon her. They aspired for martyrdom to attain this high status with Allah Almighty, and we will continue their path until the liberation of Al-Aqsa.
Russia says a failure by the U.S., Britain and France to condemn the recent Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus is a clear illustration of their double standards. In a social media post, Russia's deputy ambassador to the UN said the stance of these countries exposes their approach to legality and order in the international context. Dmitry Polyansky added Washington and London even refused to discuss a draft statement, which is a traditional norm in such cases. On Tuesday, most Security Council members except the U.S., Britain, France condemned the Israeli regime for its airstrike on the Iranian embassy. A day later, the European Union also deplored the attack, arguing that the inviolability of diplomatic and consular premises and personnel must be respected in all circumstances. Monday's attack on the embassy in Damascus killed two senior Iranian military commanders and five accompanying officers who were on an advisory mission to Syria. Secretary General of the Palestine Foundation, Pakistan, Sabri Abu Maryam, says the West, as usual, is keeping its criminal silence on Israeli atrocities.
United States, France, UK, and these kinds of Western governments, those are the so-called champion of human rights, so-called the champion of world politics, foreign policy, they are keeping criminal silence. Not only keeping criminal silence, even they are supporting military aid to the Zionist regime against the oppressed people, against the helpless people of Palestine. Those don't have weapon. The people, they don't have weapon, but they, US and UK, supporting and providing the weapon to the Zionist regime against the innocent civilians to Israel. So the other side, they are keeping criminal silence over the condemnation against the Zionist regime. And this is the very biasness. What we say, I always emphasize that, we always say that these are the double standards of the Western governments. But now, I do believe these kind of governments, Biden, Britain, French, they don't have standards. They are not like a human being. They are against the humanity. They are against the peace and stability of the world. They are criminal. They are enemies of humanity. They are enemies of peace. And they are actually responsible for these kind of heinous crime.
Iranian security forces have foiled two simultaneous terrorist attacks in the southeastern province of Sistan and Balochistan. Local security officials said the attacks hit two police and military posts in the cities of Rosk and Chabahar. According to local officials, 15 terrorists affiliated with the Pakistan-based Jaish-e-Ahmadi, the terror outfit, have been killed in the attacks. They said five Iranian security forces have also lost their lives and 11 others were injured. Sporadic clashes continue in the two cities, with security forces totally surrounding the terrorists. The Jaish-e-Ahmadi terror group has conducted a number of similar attacks in the past months, some of them deadly. The group claimed responsibility for an attack in December on a police station in the city of Rosk that killed at least 11 police officers. On January the 10th, another attack by the group on a police station in the same city killed a policeman. Days after that attack, Iran launched simultaneous drone and missile strikes on two Jaish-e-Ahmadi bases in Pakistan, killing or injuring a number of terrorists. Former U.S. Army Psychological Warfare Officer Scott Bennett joined us earlier with his take on the two deadly terror attacks in Iran's southeastern province of Sistan and Balochistan.
Or like a clock ticking, and what is happening at different numbers on the clock? What's happening at 8 o'clock and what's happening at 2 o'clock? 8 o'clock is Gaza, is Palestine, is the Israeli slaughter and the attack upon the Iranian consulate in Syria, and various genocidal, maniacal tactics of murder, and it's not war, it's murder. Murdering Americans, Canadians, British aid workers intentionally, murdering people on the beach, walking innocently, women and children. And then this attack occurs against the Iranian border with this Jaid al-Daesh group you're referring to. And it just seems they're a proxy of the real Zionist enemy, the real death to the world that needs to be extinguished like a fire. And that's what Nasrallah and the others are talking about, is slowly rising in the Muslim character, personality, and devotion to God, and snuffing out this fire with prayers and with gentleness but effectiveness and absolute victory. And I think that day is coming. But this is a distraction to, I think, deter or bring Iranian intelligence and forces looking in a different direction. So it's always a misdirection. What is Mossad's statement? Through deception, make war. So we always have to keep that in mind.
International Quds Day is an annual pro-Palestinian event marked on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. The day was designated by founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, in 1979 in solidarity with Palestinians. People worldwide will mark this year's Quds Day on the coming Friday. A correspondent, Muslim Salam, has asked people in Baghdad about the event and its importance in the Muslim world.
Today, as we witness the Israeli genocide against Palestinians, we call on the Muslim world to stand up for Palestine and show their support.
The whole world is witnessing the systematic killing of innocent people in Gaza. Even after the UN Security Council ordered to stop this genocide, the Zionist regime insists on continuing its crimes.
International Quds Day is a chance for all Muslims to stand together for Palestine. Honestly, it's unfortunate how some of the Arabic countries are standing still without taking action against ongoing genocide in Gaza.
It's a day of solidarity with the Palestinian people and to remind the world of this humanitarian case, which represents the will and struggle of the free people against colonialism.
The great Imam Khomeini initiated the Quds Day after many countries left Palestine behind. We commemorate this day annually to expose those who attempt to normalize their relationship with the Zionist regime.
International Quds Day, which was initiated by Imam Khomeini, is a great event that pushed the Palestinian issue to the fore. It showed how the axis of resistance is an indispensable regional force, and it highlighted the rights of the Palestinians. The genocide against Palestinians makes it imperative for the Islamic nation and the whole free world to stand together this Friday during International Quds Day to show their solidarity with the people of Palestine.
That brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News, but stay tuned. We've got plenty more programs coming up.
Imam Khomeini said, "The racist Zionist regime has always been a source of discord among regional states."
supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday 5 things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others, and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So, the ulema, that are Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. In that episode of the Ramadan special series, we are going to speak about sensitivity towards sin, indecency and evil deeds with a look at Ayah 92 of Surah Tawbah of the Noble Quran. Stay with us, please. Among the characteristics that God likes very much, and every faithful should have it, is غيرات, which means sensitivity towards evil and sin. According to a hadith, God likes غيرات among the faithful. غيرات means strong defense of dignity, face, family, religion, property, and country. This sensitivity acts like a vigilant police in the spirit of human being, guarding red lines and boundaries. It urges us to be alert against evil acts and sin. A hadith from the Prophet's sixth infallible successor, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, reads, Allah assigned two angels to punish a city. The people of the city were very rude and immoral. They felt no regret for their sins and did not give up their evil deeds. Allah sent them to raise the city to the ground. They saw a worshipper among the people who was praying, crying, and supplicating. One of the angels told the other, Let us go and ask him again. The other angel said, Do your duty. The first one said, Perhaps. The command has changed as the man may have repented. Wait so that I ask for our duty again. So that angel went back and asked Allah, as he had seen a worshipper among the people. Allah said, The duty is the same. Go to the city and destroy it. Then Allah added, It is true that this man is engaged in worship and prayer, but he is never upset and angry with the sin of others, and this respect to the divine laws, and his face didn't change. He has no religious sensitivity. The sensitivity of persons towards belief and religion is inevitable. The deeper is one's belief in his religion, the more sensitive he will be toward religion. The opposite of religious sensitivity is compromise and coming short on religious red lines and principles. This is called pliability and indifference. A sensitive person cannot tolerate insulting of divine laws, principles, and sanctities. When God obligates something, he wants it to be done. As we said in the beginning of this episode, Ayah 92 of Surah Tawbah is somehow related to this issue. Nor is there any blame on those to whom, when they came to you to provide them with a mount, you said, I do not find any mount for you. They turned back while their eyes were flowing with tears, grieved because they did not find any means to spend. Those faithful had no means for jihad, but religious sensitivity made them very upset and they cried in grief. Today some people insist on ignoring of religious values and principles, saying, In the modern time, we shouldn't be sensitive and rigid towards values. We should endure all tastes, ideas, and behaviors and give them chance to show themselves. The pliable people think that if person does an indecent act in public, insults sanctities, rights profanities, we should not react. They argue that not everybody thinks the same in society and everyone have their own idea. So, if we want to live comfortably, we have to tolerate them. They even attribute their justification to some Quranic ayahs. For instance, they mention Ayah 185 of Surah Baqarah, part of which reads, Allah desires ease for you, and He does not desire hardship for you. They also resort to Ayah 21 of Surah Al-Ghashiyah. So admonish for you are only an admonisher. But these people should be asked as what is their opinion on Ayah 19 of Surah Ali Imran, part of which reads, Indeed, with Allah, religion is Islam. Or, what do they think about Ayah 73 of Surah Tawbah, part of which reads, O Prophet, wage jihad against the faithless and the hypocrites and be severe with them. We should not forget that tolerance and taking easy of religious laws not only is accepted, but also it is the origin of religion. And if taking easy means to spread Islam through argument and logical debate, it is correct. Yet, one cannot come short and be indifferent against affront towards religious values. We read in history that a delegation came to the Prophet and told him, We will pay allegiance to you with three conditions. We will not perform daily ritual prayer. We will not break our idols ourselves. And let the idol Lot to remain for 1 year so that we can worship it. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said, There is no use in the religion that has no bowing and prostration. As for breaking of your idols, if you don't want to break them, we will break them. But on worshipping of Lot, I will never give you such a permission. Sure, the Prophet stood firmly against their excessive and illogical demands and rejected them. It has also been narrated on the revelation of Surah Kafirun that chiefs of polytheists came up to the Prophet and told him, O Muhammad, you obey your religion so that we obey yours and make you our partner in all our privileges. You worship our deities for 1 year and the following year we will worship your God. The Messenger of Mercy told them, I take refuge with God that I may ascribe and associate to Him. Then the Prophet came to the sacred mosque after the revelation of this surah and told the chiefs of polytheists, O you the faithless, I will never worship what you worship.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Exposé. Tonight on Exposé, Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu turn up the heat in their staged public feud over Zionist Israel's genocidal war in Gaza, as Netanyahu vows to defy any call for canceling the Rafah invasion. Now, leftist politicians and media figures go into a complete social media meltdown after former President Donald Trump said there would be a bloodbath if he is not elected in November. And finally, a political Ipsos new poll shows that half of the country in the United States of America believes Trump is a guilty man and should go to trial before the 2024 presidential election. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to defy U.S. President Joe Biden's warning not to launch a major military invasion in Rafah, which houses millions of Palestinian displaced civilians. But is Joe Biden even warning him for real, or is it just part of a useless charade for electoral purposes? Let us hear from Fuad Itayim, our broadcast expert in fake news expose. All what we heard last week on Western broadcast media was that U.S. President Joe Biden is deeply concerned about the prospect of Israeli entity Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordering a major ground operation in Gaza's southern city of Rafah. And we were supposed to take those concerns for real, just like we were supposed to believe that this was not staged. Fuad, was this something really that we were not supposed to hear coming out of Biden after his State of the Union address?
Definitely. I guess we're supposed to believe that this was a totally unplanned hot mic moment by U.S. President Joe Biden. And we're supposed to believe that Biden is suddenly extremely frustrated with the genocidal war that Netanyahu is waging. I'm not sure what he thinks he's trying to prove. I mean, seems like he wants to have a heart-to-heart with Bibi about the genocide that's being waged with the weapons that he's sending from his own administration. The public isn't stupid, though, and they see this for what it really is, which is an attempt to garner political support, and it's electoral propaganda, essentially. His actions are nowhere near his words. In an interview with Jonathan Capehart on MSNBC, Biden was asked about this hot mic moment. Mm-hmm. He said, let's take a look.
You were caught on a hot mic after your State of the Union address talking to Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Senator Michael Bennett saying, quote, I told him, Bibi, and don't repeat this, but you and I are going to have a come to Jesus meeting. What do you mean by that?
What I meant was, it's an expression used in the southern part of my state, meaning a serious meeting. And it was, I've known Bibi for 50 years and he knew what I meant by it.
So what's the come to Jesus part? What tough love are you going to give to the prime minister?
What's happening is he has a right to defend Israel, a right to continue to pursue Hamas. But he must pay more attention to the innocent lives being lost as a consequence of the actions taken. He's hurting, in my view, he's hurting Israel more than helping Israel by making the rest of the world. It's contrary to what Israel stands for. And I think it's a big mistake.
As you can see, Marwa, Biden's plan is to sit Netanyahu down and have a strict talk with him about how the U.S.-sponsored genocide in Gaza is actually starting to counter Zionist interests and that he should be more careful to stop killing innocents.
Oh, my God.
This is not only an election charade, but it's also a naive take on the slaughter that's taking place in Gaza. And honestly, it's an insult to the over 35,000 Palestinians who have been killed and the over 60,000 who have been injured. So nothing will stop Netanyahu except the U.S. demanding a ceasefire at the mm-hmm. UNSC. Mm-hmm. Not just saying a ceasefire is a good idea, but mm-hmm. actually demanding one.
And they actually passed one on Monday afternoon, and it was without the U.S. even
exactly.
voting with a veto.
Abstention.
And yet the Israelis continued with the massacres.
Biden was even asked by MSNBC if he had any red lines for the Zionists who plan on invading Rafah, which is a desperately overcrowded city that's filled with displaced, over 1.2 million displaced Palestinian civilians. And his answer, Marwa, perfectly demonstrates why Benjamin Netanyahu will not listen to anything that the Biden administration has to say,
mm-hmm.
whether it's real or whether it's electoral propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a look.
Let's hear that.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if he crosses and he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going after. There's other ways to deal with the trauma caused by Hamas.
So there is no red line for Israel, is there?
It doesn't seem so. It's outrageous that Western media is actually spouting this stuff. Biden repeats that he will never stop sending arms and funds to the Zionists. He says Rafah is a red line, and then 3 seconds later, he says there are no red lines. So what is it that's finally going to end this genocidal war? Because it's certainly not a come-to-Jesus meeting,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it is that he said. Netanyahu watched the same interview that we all watched, and he saw it as a carte blanche to continue his genocide and to continue butchering Palestinians and decimating what's left of Rafah in the hopes that Egypt is going to take in all these displaced civilians. In an interview with Fox News, knowing that there's going to be zero accountability, Netanyahu refused to bow down to international pressure and vowed to move forward with the invasion of Rafah.
We're going to do it while we enable the civilian population in Rafah to leave, as we've done up to now, but we have to finish the job.
Netanyahu knows that Biden is using the Rafah invasion red line for electoral purposes, and he basically claps back at Biden and says that he has the support of the Israeli people in doing so. This is what happens when you say you'll never cut off weapons to Israel. Netanyahu is now openly defying Biden and the rest of the international community, not just with Rafah. So in an interview with Politico, he openly states, "We do not want a Palestinian state." And this comes right after his carte blanche from the U.S. president. Politico also reported recently, citing U.S. officials, that Washington has already accepted limited operations in Rafah, once again proving that there are no red lines and the Zionists can do what they
And audaciously
play.
Say that they abstain from vetoing the so-called ceasefire, the temporary ceasefire in the UNSC. This is such a charade happening at the moment. Well, I completely understand where the people come from when they say they no longer trust Biden and they no longer want to vote for him because his words are not where his actions are.
At
the end of the day, thank you very much for letting us know what has been happening in the broadcast media, especially in the West End Zionist media concerning this very pressing issue. Thanks a million. Now, ladies and gents, we move on to digital mainstream media. So the result of U.S. President Joe Biden's weak foreign policy towards Zionist Israel has led to the Zionist Israeli Prime Minister to overtly show complete defiance when it comes to invading Rafah, stopping the genocide, or simply allowing food aid and medical supplies into the largest concentration camp on earth, known to the world as Gaza. So much so that mainstream media ran stories claiming that Biden is now considering conditioning military aid to Zionist Israel if they invade Rafah. With us is our digital mainstream media expert, Ms. Julia Qasim, to tell us how much of this is actually true.
Thanks, Marwa. So, well, let us begin by saying that none of that is true. So you see, the Biden administration is preparing to send more bombs and other weapons to Zionist Israel that would add to its military arsenal, even as Biden keeps publicly pushing for a ceasefire in Gaza. So this, Marwa, is according to the Wall Street Journal, which reported last week citing current and former U.S. officials. So the proposed arms delivery includes MK-82 bombs and KMU-572 joint direct action munitions that add precision guidance to bombs and FMU-139 bomb fuses at a value estimated to be in the tens of millions of dollars.
Oh, tens of millions of dollars and still no condition on that.
No condition and no strings. So it's true that the congressional committee leaders would have to approve this transfer first. But, you know, as we remember in December 2023, the Biden administration skipped congressional review of Israeli weapon sales to Israel, not once, but twice. So what's going to stop them from doing it a third time?
Absolutely nothing.
So not Congress, essentially. It's enough that the Biden administration continues to unconditionally supply arms to Israel, as evidence piles up that the U.S.-made weapons have been used in strikes that have killed or injured Palestinian civilians. But now the Biden administration has the audacity to lie in the face of American taxpayers who are fully bearing the consequences and the financial burden of these free transfers to Israel by claiming that they will condition military aid going to Israel. So where do they think these weapons will end up? In a weapons depot somewhere underground? No. I mean, obviously they'll be used to expand the scope of the ongoing genocide in Gaza and Rafah. I mean, where else?
They will end up on the heads of innocent civilians, kids, women, elderly, just like they have been so for the past 6 months.
Right. And at the initial start when the Zionist entity was declaring that they would invade Rafah, the Biden administration had its empty words, but they immediately approved like arms transfers. And mind you, Marwa, the whole rhetoric is false, because even back in November, Biden then said that conditioned aid to Israel was a worthy thought, as per this report by Politico, but he never actually followed up on it, of course. So in an article entitled No Conditions on Future Israel Aid, despite Biden's worthwhile thought quip written by Alexander Ward and Jonathan Lemire, who said that days later after Biden's statement, senior U.S. officials hit the Sunday shows to rule out the proposal, hinting but not outright saying that there wouldn't be a shift in the administration's Israel policy. So Politico reported that one of Biden administration official suggested that Biden's aside, made in response to a reporter's question, was less about siding with progressive sentiment and more of a window into his private frustrations with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. So this reflects, of course, the U.S. administration's frustrations after 5 months of Israeli-U.S.-backed genocide and having nothing to show for it militarily. But at the same time, it's practically the same old script that Biden recycles every 2 months to, quote-unquote, pressure Netanyahu into a ceasefire. But it would just be easier at the time for them to just hold off on their consistent vetoes at the UN Security Council votes. And even yesterday, you know,
when they did hold off on their vote,
nothing really changed on the situation on the ground.
Yeah.
The international body was not able to, you know, stop this genocide, as we could see from the scenes.
Zionists are not ready to comply. That's it.
Of course. So to add insult to that injury, Marwa, Netanyahu not only openly defied Biden's demand to stop the planned invasion of Rafah, because the U.S. knows that they're going to lose, he also lashed out at Senator Chuck Schumer, Democratic Zionist Senate Majority Lead, calling Schumer's recent criticism of Netanyahu and call for early elections there totally inappropriate. So according to the New York Times, Netanyahu said in an interview with CNN that trying to replace the government of a sister democracy was not appropriate. That's something that Israel, the Israeli public, does on its own, he said. We're not a banana republic.
I find that hard to believe. Anyways, yes.
Yeah, so Netanyahu knows that he just takes tens of millions of dollars worth of U.S. taxpayer dollars for weapons, all for free from the U.S. With his other hand, he flips the bird with any American party, including the Biden administration officials, who criticize his basically failures in Gaza.
Yeah, I completely understand where that's going, and I completely am very interested and invested in how things will work out, given now that Netanyahu is now defying UNSC, the U.S., and every ally that ever stood beside him by not complying to that latest UN resolution for a temporary ceasefire. But anyways, thank you very much, Julia, for your contribution to this segment. Now, ladies and gents, we'll move on to social media expose. Comments made by former U.S. President Donald Trump during a rally in Dayton, Ohio, warning that there'd be a bloodbath for the country if he lost the upcoming elections, has taken the U.S. and social media, for that matter, by a storm. Let us remember what he said before we hear all about the hysteria from those words that were festered on social media by our social media expert, Sima Itayim. Let's hear what he said.
If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Sima, he said it's going to be a bloodbath, and those words sparked widespread condemnation, given that recently, when he lost the elections, there was violence that ensued in the streets of the U.S. So how did social media react to this?
Hi, Marwa. Thanks for having me. So if we know Trump well, which we do, we already know that he cried fake news after the widespread condemnation he received as backlash to these comments. And he claimed it was taken out of context.
Yeah.
So in a tweet on Truth Social, since Trump's not on Twitter again yet, he wrote, "The fake news media and their Democrat partners in the destruction of our nation pretended to be shocked at my use of the word bloodbath, even though they fully understood that I was simply referring to imports allowed by crooked Joe Biden," which are crooked capital C, which are killing the automobile industry. "The United Auto Workers, but not their leadership, fully understand what I mean. With the electric car mandate being pushed by Biden, there soon won't be any cars made in the USA, unless I'm elected president, in which case auto manufacturing will thrive like never before. MAGA 2024.
All caps lock. All uppercase.
Hysterical. So if you zoom out and you listen to the clip, you see that he really was talking about the automobile industry.
Yeah.
It was a broader discussion within that context, but it's not as cut and dry as he wants us to believe. I mean, I'm not entirely sure what he was trying to say, but it didn't go down well at all with the Democrats and the liberals.
I can see that.
For instance, Robert Reich Berkley, professor and former U.S. Secretary of Labor, went as far as calling Trump fascist.
Oh, my God.
We've heard that many times before. Yeah. He tweeted the following: "This week, Trump has warned of a bloodbath if he's not elected. promised again to release violent Jan 6 criminals, claimed immigrants aren't people, and called for the prosecution of Liz Cheney. These are warning signs of fascism. If we ignore them, here's what happens next.
What happens next?
Reich posted a 5-minute video explaining his views about this specific incident.
I want to talk to you about the F word. No, no, not that F word. I'm talking about fascism. Is Donald Trump really a fascist, as some would say? Or is the word authoritarian sufficient? The term fascism is often used loosely, but you can generally identify fascists by their hate of the other, vengeful nationalism, and repression of dissent.
So he proceeds to list 5 steps in which Trump can turn America into a fascist state. Ooh. And this shows the alarming level of fracture amongst U.S. politicians when it comes to the upcoming presidential elections. But it's never really based in anything grounded. Like, he cited the Jan 6 Capitol Hill storming. Like, that was...
It's a circus. Oh, my God,
we know it was staged. There was footage of them letting them in. Yeah. And that's still, like, his main thing, you know? Like, that's... Anyway. So, moving on to Occupy Democrats, who sounded the alarm after both Trump's bloodbath comment and the promotional video he published right after.
Mm-hmm.
They tweeted a screenshot from the video with an extreme close-up of Trump's eyes in black and white. Not a pretty sight, I know, but let's see what they tweeted. Breaking. Fascism experts sound the alarm after Donald Trump releases a jaw-dropping video in which he ominously threatens Democrats directly and promises to do horrible things to us.
Ooh.
With his criminal problems mounting, Trump is ripping a vile new approach straight from the fascist playbook. The indicted ex-president released a disturbing video of an extreme close-up of his eyes in black and white that visually evokes 1984 and other dystopian works of fiction.
God, Sima, that's so American.
What he said was even worse. If you around with us, if you do something bad to us, we're going to do things to you that that have never been done before, Trump says in the video. The video doesn't expand on exactly what the things are that Trump and MAGA want to do to us, but given the long and violent history of fascism, one can imagine just how horrible they might be. Trump has already incited one violent insurrection.
Oh my God.
If he wins the White House again, he will seek retribution against all who opposed his previous coup attempt. This man belongs in prison. Lives are at stake. Democrats are using this as leverage against Trump, just grasping at straws, whatever
it's
they can.
It's overdramatic, though.
Yeah, for the upcoming elections. But we have to acknowledge that, you know, what Trump really meant was, if I don't win this election, it won't just be a bloodbath for the auto industry, but it'll be a bloodbath for the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. People must maybe took it a bit out of. But either way, I mean, it seems the U.S. is, you know, headed for, like, some interesting times. To say the least.
We're watching, we have the popcorn ready, and we're seeing how this will unfold, especially in the upcoming few months. Thank you very much, Sima.
I really
enjoyed this segment with you, because America and its social media is just on another planet, especially when it has to do with Trump. So thank you. For showing us that. This was amazing, ladies and gents, but we have more for you on Figures Exposé. In the aftermath of the Trump bloodbath comment, a Politico magazine Ipsos poll found that most Americans think Trump should go to trial before the 2024 presidential election. 3 in 5 Americans say they think the federal trial on Donald Trump's 2020 election subversion case should take place before the presidential election in November, levels that held steady since August 2023. Now, the poll also finds that a plurality of Americans believes that Trump, if convicted, should face imprisonment over just probation, a financial penalty, or no penalty whatsoever. When asked if they believe Trump is guilty of the alleged crimes, Americans were split by partisanship. Roughly half of the respondents believe Trump is guilty of the alleged crimes in the sensitive documents case with 52%, falsifying business records case with 50%, federal 2020 election subversion case with 49%, and Georgia election subversion case with 49%. Now, believe that Trump is guilty is split by party. While a majority of Democrats say they believe Trump is guilty in all 4 cases with 86%, 86%, 87%, and 86% respectively. Now, fewer Republicans think the same with 16%, 14%, 12% and 12% respectively. And a majority of independents believe Trump is guilty in the four cases, with 58%, 54%, 54%, and 53%. Now, let us move on to the most notable expose voices for this week. So we heard during our episode today voices outraged at Trump's bloodbath comment condemning the presidential candidate as a fascist and a future dictator if elected. But to be fair, there were also a lot of voices who found that this is just the way Donald Trump speaks and that he genuinely meant no harm in the context he was using the term. For one, look what Carl Embrick had to say about this on TikTok.
Did Donald Trump just threaten violence if he loses in November at a recent rally? Well, let's play the tape in question.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
Now, I find it really funny that a lot of Republicans are saying you need to look at the full context of this clip to see he's talking about the auto industry. And the reason I find that funny is immediately before the bloodbath remarks, Trump calls for a 100% tariff on cars imported from Mexico, which is a horrible policy. Putting that aside, even without the additional context, Trump is obviously not calling for violence in that clip. Anyone that is using even a sliver of good faith interpretation can see he's clearly using figurative language. The reason I find this frustrating is Donald Trump says wild stuff all the time. For example, he recently called the January 6th prisoners hostages that he would very, very seriously consider pardoning. Talk about that, or the hundreds of other crazy things he says. There is no reason to hone in on nothing burgers like these bloodbath statements.
And we end off with Jim Walsh on TikTok, who said it really doesn't matter if Trump was literal or rhetorical in his threats. What scares Jim, apparently, is something else completely. Let us find out what it is.
So our friend Donald, the Mango Mussolini, has promised, quote, a bloodbath, unquote, if he doesn't get back in this November. And of course, the question is, does he mean literally? Is he inciting violence? Or is he just pandering to the brain-dead faithful? To me, the answer is, it doesn't matter. We just don't want this guy back in office. We got to do what we got to do to make sure he doesn't get back in. That's the worst possible scenario. He said something, though, in the speech that concerned me a lot more. When he said that he was going to go crazy with the tariffs on foreign cars. Tariffs suck. They serve a very limited special interest, but they're awful. They set the stage for depressions and wars, and have many times in our history. That's what scares me.
And with this frenzy, ladies and gents, we end off our expose for tonight. Stay tuned for more eye-opening investigations on expose. The truth is just a revelation away.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, old ladies from all around the world. Welcome back to your own program, Muslim Lady. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host once again. Yes, welcome to your own program. As usual, we're going to talk about the issues that are related to all the women out there. And in today's episode, we have Sister Nahid with us to help us with the topics. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome.
Assalamu alaikum to you and all your dear listeners. I'm so glad and pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you very much for being here. How are you doing?
Good. Everything is going okay.
So that's perfect. Well, and we're in the holy month of Ramadan, so I ask everybody not to forget us from their prayers. Previously on Muslim Lady, we talked about the factors and important items that are very much crucial for every girl to take into notice and consideration before they get into the decision for marriage. Like we went through the compatibility, like family approval, just I'm counting the things I remember. And right now, I guess there are some more of these factors that we can talk about.
Yeah, sure. The first factor for today, which I'm going to start with, is taking into account the cultural differences between the couples. Mm-hmm. Like what I believe in is that both girl and boy, and especially girls, because sometimes based on their own nature, girls act at that moment, like act spontaneously without considering the side effects, like the factor that is very important, and sometimes we don't even think about it, is the cultural differences mm-hmm. within the family, within the society, and most importantly, if people are from the different areas, like different locations, different countries.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's why in Islamic heritage, when they come to talk about marriage, as for girls, to support the girls, they say that the father's approval is very important.
Yeah.
Once when we were younger, actually, we had a problem with this. Why? Girls cannot decide for themselves. And then I remember we had a professor at a school. She came to just open it up for us to tell us why the fathers have to give their approval for the girl's marriage. And then she said that this is for the girl's benefit. Like maybe you as girls are too emotional spontaneously, just as you said, you're going to make a decision. But your fathers are more experienced. They are men and they know their folk better. So maybe this is going to protect you from the consequences. Like if you do not see things in a clear vision, your parent, specifically your father, is going to see things much more clearer.
And another thing is that it was at the t-